The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
If you're 19 and you think you figured out the eternal truth of the universe, and more importantly, you're the only one who has done it, the chance that you are having a manic episode is way higher.
But what he doesn't do is look in the mirror, because although he does make that very important point, the context is, now I have been doing this a few years more than you.
Yeah, right. Yes, exactly. I've been playing pretend long. Yeah. I've read the Dungeon Master's Guide 4 times, so I know how dragons really fuck.
God-awful movie.
Movie.
Welcome back to the Gamcast, where each week we sample another selection from Christian cinema because we had no choice. I'm your host, No Illusions. Heath is off this week, so I guess he had a choice, but sitting 900 miles to my northeast is my bad friend, Eli Bosnick. Eli, how are you this fine afternoon, sir?
I'm fantastic, Noah. Excited to be back in the world of the absolutely wrong.
I don't believe you about being excited for this one. I'm sorry to say, but I am excited to welcome back the person I'm proud to call our favorite guest masochist when Marsh isn't listening, the host of the Talk Nerdy podcast, Kara Santa Maria. Kara, welcome back. We totally earned that.
I got a couple good ones in a row recently, but now we're back to utter dog shit.
Yeah.
I almost wrote long pause sigh into the notes after I wrote it. So tell us, Kara, what will we be breaking down today?
Okay, it's a film called Hell and Mr. Fudge, which, side note, they gave us a better title multiple times in the film when they said The Gospel According to Fudge.
Yeah.
Which should have been the name of the movie, but we'll put a pin in that.
Way better.
Okay. It's a film called Hell and Mr. Fudge. It's about a guy who can't decide what decade it is. So he spends a lot of time reading. Like, a lot. Like, I guess ostensibly this movie is about him trying to prove that there's no hell, but he just does it by reading.
Yeah.
It's like watching an hour and a half of a dude reading. It's the least compelling movie I've ever seen.
Well, again, it's the least compelling movie about the least compelling argument. We'll talk about it in a second.
Right. So, and also, like, the title teases you with so much. I was expecting a buddy cop movie, right?
But, oh, yeah.
So, Eli, how bad was this movie?
Well, if you've cast away the barbaric and sadistic idea of hell, and you'd like to hear the life story and tribulations of a guy who was this close to getting it, you will love this movie. I feel about Edward Fudge the way I feel about Pizzagate theorists, right? It's like, oh, guys, you were so close. You just got the names wrong.
Right, yes.
Oh, man. Like, I feel like I owe them a little bit of an apology. I was like, oh, they were... There was a big cabal.
All right, so is there anything you guys want to nominate this one for being the best at being the worst at?
Ooh, yeah. Best worst 40-year-old college student.
Amazing.
Gray sideburns. Yeah.
No fucking effort to young this guy up whatsoever except to put him in jeans. It was amazing. All right. I was going to go with best worst page counts. So multiple times in this movie, we're going to be presented with somebody's reading material and it will be comically tiny. We'll get to it when we get to it.
And of course, we teased this earlier, but I'm going to go with best worst nerd fight. Right? Because this is not a fight about whether or not hell exists. This is not a fight about whether or not God exists. This is a fight about whether God punishes you for not believing in his son by tossing your soul away like a used cigarette wrapper or burning it forever. It is the fucking who would win in a child rape Superman or Batman fight.
All right. Well, there's a lot of exciting reading to get to on the other side of this break, so we're going to keep it brief. And when we come back, we'll dive into all the riveting studying of Hell and Mr. Fudge. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Okay, what if I keep it simple? Just happy Valentine's Day. You're welcome for loving you.
Awful.
How is that awful?
It's about you again.
Hey, guys, you ready to record the podcast?
One second, Noah. Kara's helping me with my Valentine's Day card.
You offered to help with Eli's Valentine's Day card?
No. Eli said, can you look at this? It is an emergency.
It was an emergency, Kara. A love emergency.
You know, Eli, no matter the season, there's always one person you can show love to.
Hemet Mehta.
No, yourself. And there's no better way to do it than therapy.
Therapy? I thought therapy was just for people who go...
No, Eli. Therapy is a great way to take care of your mind in the same way we take care of our bodies.
When you came over today, I was eating Pillsbury cookie dough out of the tube with my mouth around it.
Yeah, well, okay. Some people take care of their bodies.
And if you're thinking of giving therapy a try, you should try online therapy with BetterHelp.
What's BetterHelp?
BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations.
That sounds great, Noah, but I won't buy anything without at least a 9% discount.
Well, that's okay too. Sign up now and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/awful. That's betterhelp.com/awful.
All right, Noah, I'm sold. Ooh, how about this? Roses are red, violets are blue. I bet your friends are jealous of you. You're welcome.
I mean, at least that one rhymed.
Nice!
All right, everyone. Welcome to the first ever Writer's Room meeting for our new project.
Woo!
Yeah.
So I was thinking we'd do a movie about how slavery was really bad in Cuba.
Oh, man, I want to do a movie about how it's bad to murder orphans.
Guys, those are both really weird ideas.
What?
No, they're not.
Yes, they are. Like, murder and slavery are bad no matter where they are and who they do them to.
I'm not so sure about
okay,
that.
Okay, so I'm supposed to have zero slaves?
Yes. Okay, listen. How about we write a movie about Edward Fudge?
Who's he?
Well, he believed that hell isn't forever. It's just a big fire that kills your soul.
Oh, I love
what
it.
What a moral.
Thought you guys might like that. So stupid.
And we're back for the breakdown. And we're going to open up on that harbinger of quality, the Bridgestone Media Group logo.
Yeah.
So we're going to open on a church in Denton, Texas.
You guys.
Yes.
Denton, Texas. This is like where I went to college, where I went to grad school.
Oh, you're a Eagle?
Yeah. Like, I was born and raised in Plano, Texas.
Oh, right on.
And then drove up to Denton, that their golden triangle. and so, like, I had this moment at the beginning. First of all, I was like, please don't ruin Denton, Texas for me. But then, like, whatever. It's
but the rest of Texas did that?
Yeah. And also, they don't reference that they're in Denton no. Like, the rest of the time. Second.
They never mention your favorite restaurant to hang out in college?
No. They don't talk about Cool Beans.
You're in the background of a couple of scenes.
There's no Jupiter House. There's none of that. Anyway, they also all start talking in this scene. And I'm like, I literally said, those don't sound like Texas accents. That sounds like straight up rural Alabama. Next scene, they're all from rural fucking Alabama.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. So
they just commuted to Denton.
Nailed it.
Yep.
They were afraid of Jupiter House. They all ate at Denny's.
Denton is very liberal for this group, for sure. Denton is like the Austin of North Texas.
Well, there you go. I'm sure the folks in Denton are very proud of that.
We are.
Fuck yeah, Cara Santa Maria. You get it.
You guys, what else was filmed in Denton? Oh, the square is in Rocky Horror.
Oh, right on.
There you go.
Yeah, you know, the old-timey looking square.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So we're in Denton, Texas, 1982. Guy's about to go on stage and he's quite nervous about it. Mm-hmm. And then we get the words come up. This is based on a true story. Now, what that means in Christian movie speak is either somebody, quote unquote, went to heaven or nothing is going to happen at all. And this is a movie about church drama. This one will be the latter.
100%.
It's the latter, baby.
Yeah. No, I wrote that in my notes as soon as that came up before I had any idea what the fuck this movie was.
Also, just for the record, they have to lie tremendously about what Edward Fudge actually thought for as much to happen as this in this movie as actually does happen.
And nothing happens in this movie.
Nothing happens.
It's incredible. Yeah.
It's a movie about nothing. It's a movie about reading. Remember that every time we give you plot points, that they are couched in just reading.
Mm-hmm.
That's reading, all that happens.
There are
in this movie.
Four different reading montages in this movie. At least four different. I can think of four different ones now.
And the rest of the time, he's still reading.
Yeah,
he's
right.
Just not
right.
Reading,
no,
in
just
a montage.
Reading in the background.
People are just talking to him while he reads. Yeah.
So then we cut to 8 years earlier, and we're getting like a reality show confessional thing. There's a guy making a documentary about this dude, Elmer Fudge. It wasn't Elmer. What was his name?
Edward
Fudge. They're making it too fucking hard on me here.
Also, there's no reason for this to be the fucking framing of the movie.
No.
Right? As far as I could tell, there wasn't ever a documentary about Edward Fudge, right? As far as I could tell, him being filmed never had anything significant to do with his life. It was like when they sat in the writer's room, they were like, well, why would there be a camera? And it's like, well, in the movie, there's not a camera.
And this is the point in time where I'm already very confused about chronology. So it starts, as you mentioned, in 1982, but it's black and white because they're on some film.
The documentary camera. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the documentary camera. And then they cut to 8 years earlier. So now it's the mid 70s. And for some reason, it's sepia.
Yes.
And they're all wearing modern clothing.
And we're about to drop back into the 50s in just a fucking second. It's so nuts. Yeah.
It's so nuts. And he wears glasses from the 50s the whole film.
The whole time.
So you never know what year it is.
No.
He'll be in college at one point in a flashback, and then they never take him out of college. His life just continues. We are, for those keeping track, four doodly-doos deep by the end of the movie.
Right. So the title shows up. Helen, Mr. Fudge, it is in three different fonts, none of which are the fonts that have been used in the credits so far, if you're wondering.
No.
But now he's going to tell us about his daddy, and his daddy had himself a radio show back in 1954. So we flash back now. We're 2 minutes and 42 seconds in. We've already lost 28 years to two flashbacks. I wrote it in my notes, like, at this rate, by the end of the fucking movie, it's going to be about a primordial amoeba. So we've got, and like the actor, the main actor is nailing this Alabama accent, and almost no one else in the movie is. Everybody else sounds like when we make Marsh do a Texas accent or something.
Yes. Everyone else is my mental picture of Southern people, right? Just herk-a-derk-a-derk-a-derk, close enough.
I hate that, like, all of these actors are like actors I've seen before.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
They're all legitimate actors. Why did they choose to do this movie?
Some of them are really good too. Yeah. Like the actor playing Sarah Fay is actually very good.
And the lead, I actually like him in other things I've seen.
Yeah. Before.
He was in The Pit.
I feel like this was a nice rest for everybody. You know how Michael Caine always talks about he did the Jaws movie because he got to go on vacation to the nice place and buy his mom a house. I feel like everyone sort of read this script and they were like, well, it's not like that shitty, and I get to go to the Jupiter Lounge, and that's pretty sweet.
Jupiter House, goddamn it. Jupiter House.
I'm so sorry.
We were gonna get a free fucking dinner until you fucked it up, Eli.
I can't eat anything in the state of Texas.
Oh, that's fair.
Jupiter House is a coffee shop, to be fair.
You can see.
Well, then we might find something. As long as they don't mind making it like lukewarm, Eli, it'll be fine.
I want you to picture me trying to order oat milk in the state of Texas and know that that is a microaggression and an attempt on my life.
Okay. So, okay, so we watched Dad do his radio show. I just want to point out, Dad's microphone discipline is fucking terrible. He's a foot and a half away from the microphone, looking in different directions as he talks. Just fucking nonsense.
Just doing his thing. And can I just throw this out there, right? So Dad has like a, you write me a question and then I tell you what the Bible says mm-hmm. about it, right? And just imagine the hubris of starting a radio show about how much you know about the eternal truth of the universe and God.
Right.
But isn't that like every fucking TV evangelical out there?
Yeah, I'm always struck.
That's a preacher's job.
Struck by it. Mm-hmm. You never just see Hank Green sitting there with a science book open, just fucking riffing into a podcast mic.
So then we cut to his house back in the 50s when he was growing up. And we get this moment that's just chef's kiss of how fucking saccharine this whole goddamn thing is going to be. The dad is getting up, getting ready for dinner, and he goes, oh, that Dagwood bum stand.
Okay, to be fair, though, and I think this was just method acting, the mom looks at him with such white hot hatred.
Yes.
At this point, I screen capped it and put it in our notes and wrote, this is how I imagine Kara whenever I speak.
It definitely, you know, like how actors do this, right? You teach acting, right, Eli? Mm-hmm. They choose sort of their backstory and they develop their characters in their minds even beyond what's written in the script. Mm-hmm. And clearly, this woman chose, I hate my husband.
Yes.
Yep.
And the dad, the radio show host, chose, I'm a creepy pedo.
Yep.
Yes.
Creepy, massive creepy pedo vibes.
Absolutely. So he,
they never like do anything with it. Just you're always uncomfortable when he's in the room with a child.
Right. So like, which is what happens here, right? He goes upstairs to get his kid for dinner and the kid is in his bedroom playing Christian radio host with his light bulb as a, on his lamp as a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, wait, I feel like you turn the lamp off for this game, right?
I would think so. Yeah, they were hot back then.
If I don't burn my lips, it means I'm not meaning it.
Yeah, it's much better mic discipline than his dad, though. He is going to burn his lips. So, okay, so he goes downstairs. Then we sit down to a fucking dinner with less spice than in the cafeteria at a British hospital. My God, can you imagine how bland that fucking food is?
Oh, my God. There's this moment, and I know this is supposed to be a polite Southern thing, where he's like, excuse me, Mrs. Habble Gabble, can I bother you for some of your okra? And there's people who talk like that to their partners. They fuck bad, okay? They fuck bad. If you can't bring yourself to say, can I have some okra? You don't eat ass.
I think that's a fair assessment, yes.
No one does both those things.
Absolutely, yeah. So now, honestly, there's a thing that we do in our notes here too, like where we'll highlight in different colors, different scenes that we're like, well, this scene we can skip if we're running long or whatever. And I did that in this movie, but like every single scene was highlighted as, yeah, no, we can skip this one. And then I was like, finally, I was like, well, fuck, I have to leave some of them in. So, but this is one that I would normally skip, except for the fact that the dad says at this point something like, you know, like, just remember, son, no matter what anybody says or science demonstrates or can be shown to be logically fucking true, the Bible is right, you know, which is going to inform him for the rest of his life.
It's a lot of logical inconsistencies with how he grapples with that sentence the rest of the film. Mm-hmm.
And again, every single person in this movie will be working off the King James Bible.
Yes.
It would be like you saying, I know the deep ins and outs of everyone on this podcast because I've heard the edited cut at the end of the movie. It's just fucking
right.
It's so insane.
So, okay. So then we fucking unswish the doodly-doo. And confessional Edward tells us what the Bible really says about hell. He explains that he's been hired by a Canadian feller to look into this whole hell thing and see if it's real. Right. So the documentarian's like, well, so what does the Bible say? He's like, well, you know, there's two schools of thought. And I'm like, wow, you'd think God would be super clear about something that consequential in his fucking book, wouldn't he? But then he quotes a part of the Bible, which critically is not about hell.
It's not.
Right.
No, He catches like a quarter of a sentence of it, which kind of sounds helly. But the full quote is, "And the third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, 'If any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark on his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of indignation.'" Which, by the way, complicated recipe, can I just say? Right? But again, like, none of that has to do with hell.
No.
That's about the people who side with the Antichrist during the end times.
No, it's like when the movie reviewer says, "Oh, this is an excellent example of the drivel this director's known for." They reduce it to just excellent on the poster. Yeah, it's that, it's that kind of shit. So, but he's gonna explain to us that there are the traditionalists that think you burn in hell forever, and then there are the so-called conditionalists who say the wicked are punished, but not eternally, because that would be impossibly, unimaginably evil, right?
Yeah. So this is where I wrote in my notes, "Oh, so this is going to be one of those episodes where Noah pontificates about scripture and I am utterly lost because all the dialogue sort of blends together with all the thous and hats."
Oh my God. Yeah, this is a tough one. Yeah. So he introduces us to a
This is when Kara started the dishes. She just stood up.
Yeah, oh, okay, I just stood up and walked away and then I go, "Oh, fuck, I'm working."
Killer. Time for a walk. Come on, buddy. Movie will still be playing when I get back.
Yep. No, even my partner was like nodding off and like he was like playing video games on his phone. At one point. And usually he's really into these movies.
How dare he?
I know. It's boring, you guys.
I'm going to send him a friend request on Fishdom, though.
So,
my friend on Fishdom.
So yeah, but at this point, he introduces us to his almost literal yarn and pushpins board.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's got his traditional view and conditional view cork board that he's going to refer back to through the rest of the movie. But first, he's got to go to Vanderbilt to do some research. So he dips out, but as he does, he's like, "But you can hang out with my friend Joe Mark." Everybody in this movie but me has two names. Joe Mark.
That's very Alabaman. Joe Mark, Seraphite.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So now we get
Edward Fudge.
His best buddy Joe Mark doing his confessional.
Okay, so why is Joe... I know why is this movie at all, but why... is Joe Mark in the movie?
Well, he's in it a lot.
He's in it a tremendous amount.
So because the other option would be to have the woman in the movie know a thing.
Oh,
right. Because
you're right.
Every single fucking thing that Joe Mark does, because he's just always bouncing ideas off of him and he's talking theology with him. We know that his wife went to theology at the same theology college as he did, right? So the wife could serve that purpose in the movie, but we can't have her thinking all the time.
No, we need her making cookies.
And doing laundry, yeah.
Yeah, she's got a very important nag to do in every single scene that she will be in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, why is every Christian movie, why is every Christian movie so gay? Like in every Christian movie, the main male character, it's sort of, okay, did you guys see all the memes that came out after the hockey show on HBO?
No.
Yes, obviously.
So obviously. So there's all these memes of like straight white middle America bro dudes being like, "Dude, being gay seems awesome. Like, you get to fuck your best friend and then go to the gym together." And you're like, "Yeah, dude." Like, obviously. But also, you could do that with a woman, but okay. And so it's like, that is this whole movie. Joe Mark is in his life 99% of the time, and his wife is just there as his housekeeper.
Even when his wife leaves. Yeah. Yeah. No, so, in case you're wondering why Heath isn't here, it's because of Joe Mark's opening line. He goes, "Well, you know, Edward was never really good at sports unless you count ping pong as a sport." And Heath has been screaming, "Of fucking course you count ping pong as a sport," at his goddamn microphone for the last 72 hours. He's been breathing into a paper bag for days. He's enraged. Which is good. It's good that he left before the character that's supposed to be good at ping pong has to play any ping pong in this movie, because that would have done him in. He'd been off forever after that. So, but this is where we learn that when he was in the eighth grade, Edward wrote a defense of the New Testament canon. That's how much of a Bible nerd he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. We also learn that, and we're going to get ready. We're going to doodly do again. Be ready for a lot of these. We learn that when they were kids, Edward and Joe Mark had a cool friend named Davey.
Yeah.
Oh, you know Davey's cool because of his leather and cigarettes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah, so we doodly do into Edward, Joe, and Davey hanging out, smoking cigarettes, talking about the New Testament canon, as cool kids are wont to do.
And there's this great thing where whenever there's a bad kid in a Christian movie, they have to be bad, but they can't be so bad that people will be offended and turn off the movie. So Davey's like, so you're really going to study that Bible stuff? And he's like, yeah, I sure do like it. And he's like, okay.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
I guess we can all agree that's an awesome way to spend your time, but I'd rather ride most cars or whatever the fuck I'm doing.
And then, did you see that weird scene where he pulls out a hip flask and he goes, you guys want to snort?
Yeah, I thought maybe that was like...
You mean his crystalline goblet?
Yes, it was.
I was like,
quite a fancy little flask.
Liquor? Yeah.
So what was supposed to happen is they were supposed to get a hip flask and they all stood outside of the fucking gas station where they were going to buy it. And it was like, I just don't want to see nobody. I don't want anyone I know to see me walking in there, man. I can't afford it. So they got grandma's fucking scotch decanter, which is kind of in the shape of a hip flask.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it looks like, if it's a hip flask, it looks like Liberace's hip flask.
But why does he ask them to snort the liquor?
Like maybe he doesn't know how it works yet. They're all doing lines.
No, I've heard that. A snort of liquor.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you're making that up, but it's nice of you to move us on.
Should have hung out at the Jupiter crack cone after dark.
Jupiter house. It's not that hard. Yeah. Okay. So then.
Well, it certainly wasn't crackoon.
He's like, I want to hang out, but I've got to go help my old man move short blocks.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What does that mean? Anyone?
I think it's engines. I think short block.
What are short block
engines? Are engines without with the heads unattached.
I don't move anything. Even now, I'm the dad. I don't move stuff.
I think I'm talking shit. I don't know anything at all about engines, so I'm probably wrong.
Emails.
Yeah, right. So yeah, but basically they have this conversation. They're like, wow, Davey, you're probably gonna burn in hell. And he's like, nah, I'll find Jesus when I'm older, as long as I don't die in a car accident. Anyway, I'm done with this alcohol. I'm gonna drive away.
As fast as I fucking can.
So the next scene, we get the phone call that Davey didn't make it.
Yeah.
Edward's upstairs teaching his little brother what the cave people in the 50s considered the planets.
Nine planets as God intended. Well, thank you.
We either have the eight or we have to add the fucking rest of the shit in the Kuiper belt.
No,
okay.
No, I get to, but you told me to memorize
either that.
My grandma has three hats or whatever the
wait,
fuck.
Wait, you did that one?
But yeah, but now there's more shit. So now it has to be my very elderly mother just served us nine pizzas, mate. However, our quite vapid aunt 2002 TX300, 2005 UQ513. That's the name of the ant. They haven't named those ones yet. Made another very useful Irish cream. That's too much to remember, Eli.
That's awesome. Do you
that
hear
awesome.
How awesome the thing you just said is? You just disproved
that was
yourself.
Actually pretty good.
Do you know how I remembered the planets when I was young?
How's that?
It was from an episode of Saved by the Bell when Screech teaches Zach Mvemsnup.
Okay, all right.
And I still do that in my head.
Sure.
Mvemj snup.
It's not snup, though. It would be some... Well, it just depends on when.
Yeah.
But okay. But then dad comes in and he's like, we can't get Eli and Noah started on the Pluto thing. You know, you need to leave the room so I can talk to your brother about something very serious now. And he explains to him that Davey died painfully in a drunken car accident. He's like, let me give you some details so you can real visualize it.
I really need you to understand. You can be alive for so much longer after you can't breathe than most people think. People say it's the worst feeling in the world, but I have no idea.
How would you know? Because they all die.
A little taste of hell, though. Kind of a little sneak preview.
Well, but that's what he said. He's like, but Dad, Davey wasn't baptized. Is he burning in hell? And Dad's like, oh, you know what's a funny thing about this here window on your wall?
Yeah.
You know.
It's so weird. Like, Dad's supposed to know everything about this shit. And he goes, Dad, point blank, is Davey in hell? And he goes, well, Davey's not in hell, but he sinned, and the punishment for sin is death. And I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Means he's in hell.
He goes, I don't have all the answers. I'm like, you have a fucking radio show called I Have All the Answers, right?
Yeah.
Fuck you. Tell your kid what you believe.
The kid goes, wait, he's going to burn in hell forever for wanting to see the world? And Dad goes, yes. And I want to point out two things about this story. One, like every fire and brimstone preacher we have ever heard about, Ray Comfort, Joel Osteen, whatever, anyone you care to name, they had a traumatic childhood with a friend who wasn't saved dying, and then the adults in their life introducing them to the absurdity of hellfire, so mm-hmm. they spent the rest of their life justifying it or not justifying it in the case of Edward Fudge. But two, doesn't this show that you don't need to learn ancient Greek to see that hell is ridiculous? The rest of this movie will be like, well, I actually studied Mephibians, and in Mephibians, the word grave actually does not mean worm. No, you can tell a third grader, hey, do you think anyone should be punished forever? And the third grader will be like, I'm going to stop you right there. No.
Yes. Right. Yeah, so, but we get that backstory, but then we go back to the, I wrote present in my notes. This is, I guess, in the 70s again, the beginning of the documentary. Edward's back from Vandy, and he's going to present now the three arguments on either side of the debate, right? The hell forever and the not hell forever side, right?
There are three arguments now? I thought there were only two.
Yeah, no, he's got three arguments on either
side.
Oh,
the sub-arguments.
Yeah, well, yes. Sorry. Three sub-arguments.
Gotta follow the note cards here.
Yes, exactly. Are you not following along with your pushpins at home, Kara?
Yeah, this is the plot,
it
right?
Is.
It involves intertestamental evidence.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I hate that was not auto-corrected when I wrote that.
Right, he kept talking about fucking pseudepigrapha, and autocorrect will give you nothing on that. You could be one letter away.
Pseudepigrapha.
It's good, man. Fuck you, pseudepigrapha. It. So, okay.
My autocorrect was like, he's trying to write Sudafed again, trust me. I'm in there. I've done this.
So, yeah, but so, and so he's got these little index cards that he's putting beneath the two arguments, right? One says, you know, Old Testament evidence on the side of the traditionalists. And then on the other side, it says Old Testament evidence on the side of the other guys. And I'm like, well, that doesn't fucking count. Like have you read the fucking book? Like, this isn't a he said, she said thing. Check the fucking book. Right?
But that's the whole point, right? This whole time he's trying to act like the Bible is infallible and that we should like have a literal interpretation of it. And then he's like, I'm confused every time it's conflicting.
Yes, right.
It's like, yeah, dude.
Right, exactly. It's funny. That's you can
Bible.
Actually justify both arguments using this same book. It's nuts. It's
Jesus Christ.
Crazy. Sorry, one side of his fucking notes, it's got the argument for the old style, like Jesus argued for a literal hell or whatever on one side. And the other, the card on the other side is, no, he didn't.
No.
Nuh-uh.
Fuck you, Craig. Also point out that all of these arguments are the setup by people who believe in hell, right? So if you're an annihilationist, you actually don't care what the Old Testament said because the Old Testament is the old one. That's what there was a new one. Then there's the argument about whether Jesus talked about hell. He definitely didn't talk about hell, but people like to reinterpret Matthew to be about hell. So that's a bad argument for his side. And then finally, it's just, does the church teach about hell, which has nothing to do with what's true. It's just,
yeah.
Does the church fall down the stairs on Sundays in May? Maybe.
All right, nerd.
Saying. Get your annihilationism from the New Testament like a fucking American.
Right. So, okay. So now we're in the 1970s with another one of these spiceless hell dinners with grown-up Edward and his family. This is where the wife is like, hey, why the fuck was there somebody running around filming you in the movie? Like, did we have to justify there being a camera? It makes no fucking sense.
Yeah, and Edward goes, the cameraman seems to think this will make an interesting film. It is not.
Nope, it did not.
It won't, no.
It will not. He was
wrong.
So.
Oh, and the mom here, this is where we get real confused for a while. I saw the confusion in everyone's notes because the mom in her flashbacks is the same age as she is in the present day.
Yes.
Whereas in the flashbacks, the kids are children and then they're 40-year-old adults.
Yes.
But the mom is like 45 the whole time, which is really strange.
Well, and critically, she's like the same age as the actor playing Edward, regardless of which, at what age he is. Yeah, right.
Yes, it's very confusing.
Yeah. So, yes, I couldn't tell. I couldn't tell if this was supposed to be the mom or the wife when she was older. But yeah, this is the mom. So now she's doing a confessional telling us about when Edward first started at Coastal Christian College in Florida back in 1962.
This is when all the cool cars start being.
Oh God! Couldn't we just make cars that look like that now? I mean, they could just work like modern cars, but look
we
like
do.
That.
Oh, they're called boats. Just get in a boat on land.
So okay, but then we have that moment where like his dad drops him off at his college, but his dad can't like hug, embrace him, or let him see him cry. So he just has to leave real quick.
Yeah.
It's also like the weirdest scene because they like spend an inordinate amount of time talking about how hard it was for his dad to drop him off at college. They're from Alabama. He's dropping him off in college in Florida. You could just drive to where they are. And he's acting like it's so difficult to leave his kid behind.
And this is such apologia for a shitty dad, right? It's like, no, trust us. It was really hard for him. This is why we're doing a one-on-one with a fictional mom. Like, oh no, your daddy loved you.
Yep.
Can I say, there would be, I do not care if I actually possessed the eternal truth of God's will. If I was not able to make my child feel loved when I dropped him off at college, I am a failure.
Yep.
It does not matter if my eyes glow and I deliver messages directly from the Almighty. If I can't give my kid a hug, I done fucked up.
This says so much about our childhoods, Noah or Eli, because you're taking the tack that this guy was evil and heartless. And I'm like, what the fuck are they going on about? He dropped off his kid at college that he paid for his kid to go to college. Thanks, fucking dad. That's fucking awesome.
Okay, Kara's going to do the fucking you got food in your belly monologue from Fences.
I wrote, oh, boo-hoo, how hard.
I went to college an hour away from home. And then my parents moved six states away. Like, so yeah, no, I'm with you, Kara. I don't know what the big fucking deal is.
Calm down. His dad literally cries as he's driving away. And to be fair, this is my best worst, right? Because this is when he's dropping off his 40-year-old, 18-year-old son.
Yeah. Well, yeah, his son is the same age as the dad character. Yeah. So Edward goes in to be greeted at Schmollage. I cannot call the fucking Christian Academy of Bible the fucking college. So he's going to greet at Schmollage. And this is where we're gonna meet the bad guy, Holloway.
Oh yeah, I love it. He's like, he sees Edward in the crowd and he goes, freshman Bible major, I can pick him out. And I'm like, what do you mean? He looks like an emeritus professor.
Yeah, relax.
That is not a freshman Bible major.
You can tell the freshmen from their long gray beards, can't you? Yeah.
Not since Dear Evan Hansen has someone so unkindly made an adult play a teen.
So yeah, but we learn here about the sermons on the step. Any student is allowed to give a sermon on the step on Sundays. Just keep them short.
Oh, is this the first time he introduces himself as Edward Fudge? It's as delicious as it sounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's where he's going to meet his wife to be. So he sees.
I threw up in my mouth.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, that the only appropriate thing for you to say that on is like an orgy, right? If
it's
you're
an oral
Fudge,
sex thing, and like the oral sex is obviously already
and your genitals
happen,
are already dipped in hardening chocolate, then
yes, exactly.
As delicious as it sounds is appropriate.
So now he wants to meet Sarah, so he locks his bike to hers, like in the Jack Johnson song, but. Then she's like, hey, some asshole locked my bike to his. And he's like, oh, that was me. I didn't want nobody to steal your bicycle. And she's like, oh, okay. And then she rides away without him actually like, you know, taking advantage of the opportunity that he engineered.
I caught up to you.
Did people really lock their bikes in the 60s?
I don't know.
Like on Christian college campuses?
Well, that's her point, right? She's like, dude, who on this Christian college campus is going to steal your bike? And he's like, I was trying to imprison you into a conversation with me. I failed.
Yeah, right.
Now I do it with my physical presence.
Yeah, exactly.
There's also like, this is the intro to like the weird subtle racism throughout the film where he's like, what are you studying? And he's like, I'm studying Bible. I want to be a Bible minister. And that's my only path unless you can make a living playing ping pong. And she's like, you can only make a living playing ping pong if you're Chinese. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? Yes.
And you watch both of these real modern day actors be like, we just said those words.
Oh, why didn't we do that?
Really got to read these scripts my agent sends more carefully. Also, I know it's just a tiny detail, but I do have to talk about it. They're doing this walk and talk, but it's a bike and talk. And they've asked these actors to bike too slow to stay.
Yes,
to stay upright.
So they're just veering wildly back and forth.
It's hilarious.
The entire time they're doing this boring meet.
There's probably a bunch of outtakes of them crashing. I would love to see those. So, okay. So then we check in. He's at Bible school. And as he's walking by a class, he hears an actor I have down as Angry Dan Marino given like an informal lecture about God's grace and why how God probably even loves Methodists and Episcopalians, right?
Yeah.
And Edward comes in and he's like, wait, what is this fucking heresy over here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm so confused at this point because he's basically preaching like, I think against denominations. He's saying like, if you're a believer, like you're going to be saved regardless and grace actually, grace and works and all that kind of stuff. But I'm confused at this point because I'm like, what the fuck religion are these people then?
Yeah, I think they're
just evangelicals.
Baptists?
What does that even mean?
Yeah, evangelical isn't like a denomination specifically.
I know.
I think so they're Baptist. I guarantee you,
they never say that they're Baptist, but they do shit on Presbyterians and Methodists a lot.
And Catholics. And yeah, I actually have no fucking idea. I would love to be able to pop into that room long enough to go, what about Mormons? So Angry Dan Marino would go, oh God, no, not Mormons.
No, no.
God's grace only
really
goes
nice
so
Jews?
Fucking far.
No, come on, don't
God
be silly.
Damn it, shut up.
I thought they might be Mormon a handful of times because of, like, there are a lot of very Mormon-y things in this film.
Racism.
Like, the way that they dress, there's no crucifixes anywhere. There's this one picture of Jesus that they show over and over that's in every Mormon church.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, this is confusing.
Hot white Mormon Jesus. They definitely have him in there.
Yeah.
Just this entire time where he was supposed to be blown away by this new, like, idea of grace I wrote in my notes. This is what happens when I'm trying to describe podcast drama to Kara. Just like,
I do not care.
But so after all this heretical talk about how Presbyterians, you know, might not be of the devil, Edward confronts Angry Dan Marino outside the class. And he's like, all right, if you don't believe me, I challenge you to give a sermon on the step tomorrow about how wrong I am.
Yeah, this is Carl Ketcherside, and he's a rebel.
Yeah,
he's preaching without a permission.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
He's rabble rousing.
He's an outsider.
Well, and it's so funny because like all of this stuff about denomination, like I know that retroactively, right? Like I figured that out later in the movie and then applied it here. At this point, when I was taking my notes, I'm like, this movie is so far up its own ass. We lay people don't know what he's trying to fucking challenge him to do a sermon about.
Yeah, I think that this is what they think the fundamental debate between progressive and conservatism is.
I guess.
They're like, Ketchikan or whatever. Oh, Ketcherside.
Ketchikan.
And then later, Fudge. They're like liberal Christians.
Yeah.
And everybody else are conservative Christians. But really, they're just all fucking idiots.
That's the problem.
They're all idiots. And they're arguing about nuanced bullshit, none of which is true. And over, they're like, well, if the Bible says it's true, it's true. If you know it's true, you need to preach that it's true. True, true, true. None of this is true.
No. And
it's all made up.
Much of it is like verifiably untrue. Yeah. All right. Well, believe it or not, that is the plot. That's all we're ever going to get. So while we come to grips with that emotionally, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in a minute with even more of Hell and Mr. Fudge.
Kara Santa Maria.
Yes, Eli.
As an influential person in both the atheist movement and science communication circles, you've managed something really extraordinary by not being named in the Epstein files. How did you manage it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a little secret called not associating with the worst kind of person, you know, because you aren't one.
Clever. But whether or not you're in the Epstein files, you can dine out just like Kara here does with Factor.
Oh, they're going to love that intro.
Factor makes healthy eating easy with fully prepared meals designed by dietitians and crafted by chefs. So eat well without the planning or cooking, no matter whose private plane you're about to catch.
That's right, Eli. And with 100 rotating weekly meals to keep things fresh and delicious through winter, Factor never gets boring. Unlike the news of every badly behaved man being exactly as disgusting as you thought he'd be.
You said it, Kara.
But Eli, have you actually tried Factor?
I sure have. Factor sent us a box to try when they first became a sponsor. I love how I can heat and eat their meals in under 2 minutes.
All right, Eli, I'm sold. Where do I sign up?
Head to factormeals.com/awful50off and use code awful50off to get 50% off and free breakfast for a year. Eat like a pro this month with Factor. New subscribers only, varies by plan. One free breakfast item per box for 1 year while subscription is active.
Factor meals, pretty much the only pleasant surprise we get these days.
Hello?
Hey, excuse me, ma'am. Do you have a moment to talk about our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ?
Oh, piddle paddle, you Christians in your fire and brimstone don't scare me.
Oh, ma'am, we're not that kind of Christians.
You're not?
No, we're annihilationists.
What's an annihilationist?
Well, we believe that when you die, you just die.
Oh, so you're atheists.
Sorry, no, sorry. You die. We go to heaven.
Okay, so God just gets rid of most people when they die.
Yeah, he burns them right up.
Well, that's the second most evil belief I've ever heard, so why the hell not? You guys like cookies?
As long as they're not burned.
Like your soul will be.
Yeah, no kid, I got it.
And we're back for more of this shit. We're going to rejoin the action with some of the confessionals building up what a big deal sermon on the step was. Right, except for one of them actually says it wasn't all that serious, but he took it seriously after they we talked about it. Anyway, but he's got to go out and do his sermon thing on the step. But first, Don Holloway, the bad guy, you know, the guy who's going to out-ski him or whatever, he goes up and he crushes his sermon on the step.
Yeah, he's playing the hits.
Yeah, because he just says like mean shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Because his whole sermon is about how everybody but them is going to burn in hell. And then Edward steps up and he's like, actually, I think maybe God wouldn't burn everybody except for our very small slice of Christianity in hell for eternity. And everybody's like, boo, you suck.
My sermon isn't so much a statement as it is a question.
Yeah, he did say that.
But yeah, his sermon sucks and nobody claps for him. And Sarah Faye, though, actually, she's kind of
soaking.
She's like into humiliation stuff, I think, right? Because there's like three times she gets really turned on by him, and it's always when he's just humiliated himself.
Look, if you're a Christian woman in the 50s, you can't ask to pee on your husband, but being Edward Fudge's wife is pretty damn close. No, get up there and argue the opposite of what everybody believes in the most closed-minded part of the world. Get up there, hon.
Yeah, why don't you give that a try?
It's a back massager. I brought it.
So then we have his confessional, right, in the modern day going, he's like, well, I guess that's where it all started. And we're like, we don't even know what it is, man.
Yeah, my God, nothing happens. Yeah. It's like, that's when I decided to read for the next 20 years.
Oh, my fucking God. Yeah, so this is the first of the reading montages, right? This is where Holloway and Edward Fudge are our library rivals, right? Trying to out-preach each other.
They do the head bump.
Yeah.
I really wanted Holloway, the bad guy, to like be getting injected with all the illegal Russian steroids.
Yeah, right.
But we also find out here that Holloway's not really the bad guy. He's like the front for the real bad, the bad guy behind the bad
right,
guy.
Right, that's Mr. Simon Claridge.
These people's fucking names, man.
And again, what's so wonderful about this movie, right, is that they can't really name any names. They just have to, right, they can't take any real issue with any practicing theology, because that's all the churches in the fucking universe, right? Edward Fudge and like nine other guys, Kirk Cameron being one of them, believe this weird bullshit tiny corner of Christianity. So they can't be like, fuck you, Joel Osteen. So they're just like, we'll make up a guy. His name was Simon. He was weird for some reason.
Yeah, right. But Mr. Claridge here, he grabs Edward and he's like, Edward, you know, because Edward's getting better and better at doing his sermon on the steps. And he's starting to convince people that maybe Methodists aren't going to burn in hell. So he takes Edward off to the side, you know, to have a conversation. He's like, you know, this whole grace unity thing that you're preaching is dangerous. Arbitrary lines between the denominations are necessary, damn it. That's how I make my living, man. You're fucking it up. But they tell him he's being too, he's going in for too much of this progressive hokum.
Yep.
And I do want to say that Claridge does make one great point, which is he's like, hey, man, if you're 19 and you think you figured out the eternal truth of the universe, and more importantly, you're the only one who has done it, the chance that you are having a manic episode is way higher.
Yes.
Just way higher.
That's true.
But what he doesn't do is look in the mirror, because although he does make that very important and astute point, the context is, now I have been doing this a few years more than you.
Yes, right. Exactly. I've been playing pretend long. Know, yeah. I've read the Dungeon Master's Guide 4 times, so I know how dragons really fuck.
Yeah, but it is like, but it's an actual indictment on their entire fucking field of study, right? That somebody could come in as a fucking freshman Bible student and be like, yeah, my entirely contrarian point of view, though, has as much justification as your dumb shit, mm-hmm. right? Because it's all made up anyway.
And it's also why they have to overreact to it, right?
Sure.
If you stand up in science class and you're like, excuse me, professor, I actually think that mitochondria is not the powerhouse of the cell. They'll be like, cool, we can just look. There it is. Yep. I see it.
You're wrong.
Look, discoverable processes. Let's start from base principles. Oh, it's me again. Look at that. Yeah. Right? But when it is a very specific how dragons fuck canon that you're working
right.
in.
Right. It's heresy. It's got to be burn them at the stake. Yeah.
Keith can't just be like, I've got two dicks. And then you're like, absolutely not. Sorry, private fight. It's okay. The podcast drama I was talking to Kara about earlier.
Not interested. But you know what? You know what I have to say to that? I started learning Greek when I was 6.
Motherfucker. He drops the mic. He's like, oh, you
sick
think
burn.
I'm... Yeah. So then we get our second study montage.
I read that out loud when I was watching. I was like, square in the knee.
It's hard to spell phonetically, but I think I nailed it.
You did a great job.
The closed captioning on Amazon lists this music as determined to succeed music.
Fuck yeah, baby.
And part of this montage is like, because, you know, what are you going to do with a montage of somebody reading books in a library? Part of it is him trying to carry too many books up the stairs. And I'm like, make 2 fucking trips, dude. And then I remember like every time I've ever carried in groceries. And I'm like, yeah, you're good. You're good, man. But this like 11-second montage, this one ends with Mr. Claridge and Mr. Holloway meeting with the dean about trying to do something about Edward and all his heresies, right?
Okay. This is such a weird scene, right? Because I have seen the fucking kid gets in trouble for speaking out against the man movie. That's 1 out of every 3 fucking movies. Mm-hmm. And what happens is the bad guys tattle to someone in authority and then the authority punishes the good guy and we go, oh, the system was weighed against him. Except that's not what happened.
No.
They tattled on him and the dean was like, I don't care about this bullshit. I'm Cara Santa Maria in a wig.
No, he actually does what a dean should do. He's like, okay, so debate him.
Yeah.
Like, this is scholarship.
Or don't. Just leave me the fuck alone. Yeah.
But they're like, but no, we don't want real scholarship. This is Christian college. Scholarship is for the libtards.
Look, we can't. This isn't the fucking mitochondria. You can't just look. You have to make him stop saying this stuff because we all have to say the same bullshit.
Just say your thing louder. Nothing matters. I'm the dean of a Christian college.
Why? Did you notice that he had like a red bus? Like he had one of those like British buses on his desk. And then he was like stroking a London taxi.
Okay. Let me explain. So for those of you without acting experience, sometimes they give you a couple of really cool props and you start to play with them when the cameras are off. And then they're like, hey, time to stop playing with the super cool bus on your desk. You got to do our stupid scene in our stupid movie now, but you kind of still want to play with the bus. So you just kind of, you touch it a lot instead of acting.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah. So, but then we catch up with Edward. He's at the library again. His girlfriend finds him. He stood her up for their date because he's so busy with the pseudepigrapha.
With theology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they go to leave for their date and she sees a sign on the door that's like, come here, Holloway, Pone Fudge and all his heretical bullshit. 7 p.m. Be there, be square.
I hate this movie so much.
So he goes to see Angry Dan Marino about it. He's like, what am I going to do? And he's like, you've got to go and preach even harder than he preaches.
You got to preach more preachiness than ever. He has this great moment where he's like, he's going to try and make it about character. And you need to do that. Make it about God's character. And I just want to say, I would not volunteer to defend the character of the guy who drowned the world.
Yep. Like,
that would have been a weak side for our argument. I would have been like, ooh.
Well, there were 2 bunnies he didn't drown. Well, 7. No, 7. They're clean. Yeah. But then we're back to the Sermon on the Step again, as though nothing had happened in the last half hour of the goddamn movie.
Because nothing did happen.
Noah, my computer is broken. I wonder if you could read what I wrote at the top of my notes for this scene.
Did you write, let's get ready to humble?
I did write that. Yes, I did.
That made me sad.
I did. Why did I read my own joke? Because I was too busy congratulating me.
You've skipped a lot of funny jokes that you wrote throughout
the
thing.
Thank you, Kara.
I think my favorite was, oh shit, they made it This Guy Is Wrong poster. Well, not poster, 8x11.
Yeah, it is an 8x11. Right. Yeah.
But yeah, so Calloway's given his talk. He's like, you know, I'm sick and tired of hearing all these heresies about how heretics aren't going to burn in hell. His entire argument seems to be, I'm correct, damn it. That's the way we've always done it around here. But then Edward shows up in the middle of his speech and he stands up on his bicycle.
You're going to break his own neck on that golden bike.
The most stable of things.
Yes, yeah. And he's like, a man trying to stand on a bicycle that doesn't even have a kickstand up. Well, my buddy holds it, am wise. And he yells about John 3:16. And we're all like, oh, wow, that's the background of sporting events first. Ooh, that's an important one.
That's
yeah.
the one that we kind of didn't say a bad thing at one point during its 1.5 sentences. And then he falls off the bike. And again, going with my humiliation kink theory, his wife is fucking soaking wet after that.
Oh, yeah, 100%. She's squirting at this point.
Oh,
yeah.
She's squirting at the memory of it, right? Because we cut to the documentarian asking her about it as she does dishes, because she's always got to be doing dishes or laundry. She goes, oh, yeah, I was a gone pecan. It's pecan, what? But she made it rhyme the way she said it.
It's nice that the dirt people can sometimes have a rhyme that the rest of us can't. Huh? That's fun
the
for them.
People, Jesus.
So, but they got married, had kids, etc. And he's like, I bet it was great being a preacher's wife. Huh? And she's like, well, if he was less honest, it would have been great. He wouldn't even get us a new fucking car, the cheap bastard.
He was really bad at taking free money the job. It's fucking crazy because they wrote your lines for you. It's like you just have to recite a play over and over again. And then when someone's young kid dies, you just go, oh, he's up in heaven. And that's really, there's fucking one requirement. And he blew it. He blew it over and over and over again. So we were poor at the free money job.
Well, and she's like, you know, we didn't get no new Buick every year. He just drove around in that beat up old Opel GT he had. So then we cut to him like showing up. His dad owns a publishing company, right? He's a little fucking Nepo baby getting his Nepo baby book published. But he pulls up in this Opel GT, which they have had to hilariously beat up because an Opel GT is actually kind of an ostentatiously sporty little car. You know, that's a pretty, pretty nice looking car. So they've really beat it up and just painted rust onto it and everything. But this is where we get my best worst, right? Because Edward Fudge has now published his book and he goes into his dad's fucking office. His dad's the publisher that published it. And we see his book, and I cannot exaggerate how tiny this little tiny ass book is. Mm-hmm. Right? You could barely get 3 folds into the cover because there were so few fucking pages to fold around.
Yeah, I wrote, they have his book. I mean, more a zine than anything.
Oh, it is like literally, it's like 26 pages. I was trying to find this book, the first thing that Edward, but I can find no record of him publishing a book before the main one that this is about. So I was damn curious to see if it exceeded 40 pages. But at any rate, so we see his little book.
Wait, this movie is about a real book?
Yeah, the book that he publishes at the end of it. Yeah.
Oh, God.
To be clear, The Fire That Consumes is only 442 pages. And I know at home you're like, oh my gosh, this is it. But for a scholarly work, that's pretty fucking short.
Well, and as we'll see later, it takes like years off of his life.
Yeah, it takes him like 20 fucking years to write a 400-page book. Yeah.
And he like loses his family and shit.
Right.
I mean, he doesn't really, but he almost does.
Well, they went on vacation at one point and he tried to make it seem dramatic. Yeah. But so now, okay, so now that he's showing the documentarian around his church, this is where we're going to meet Arnold the custodian. And he walks in and he's like, Arnold the custodian, I got a camera behind me. He has a very like, you're not raping any kids in here, are you? Kind of a sound to his voice. Right. But the custodian is the movie's first African-American, which is great.
So clearly when he asks why the cameraman is behind him, he goes, Oh, he's making a documentary like Roots?
Which was not a documentary. I don't know.
No, Roots is not.
Historical fiction. But yeah, yeah. But yes, he's black. So the only film he's aware of is Roots, apparently.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, and then Fudge talks about him like he's not standing right there to the documentarian and says, these folks are the salt of the earth.
The salt fuck does that mean?
Of the earth. It means I'm racist.
Yeah. Right. So, okay. So now he's at home when Joe Mark is working on his car for him. For the rest of the movie, Joe Mark will always be doing work for him every time we see them, these two together.
Oh,
right?
Their relationship is so fucked.
Yeah.
Like, he is the most lazy, entitled. Like, all he does is read all day.
Yep.
His wife is constantly doing laundry, cooking, and the dishes. And then his friend is always doing handiwork around the house.
He's always doing the man stuff. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's so at the very least, up. If you're going to have, like, if your poor wife has to do all the woman shit, you have to do the man shit. You have to at least kill the fucking bug.
But Jesus. They're clearly like in some sort of weird thruple.
That's what I thought, yeah. Because it does play like Joe Mark and Sarah are fucking.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Or like Joe Mark and
Edward. Well, yes, definitely. Fucking. Joe Mark and Edward are fucking. Yeah, there's no question of that.
She just wanted to see what Edward was so excited about. Right. She's like, all right, Joe Mark.
So while he's working on the car, Sarah comes out and she's got this magazine. And again, magazine in air quotes, they made an extra thin prop magazine so his book would look better by comparison, right? There are four pages to this thing, right? But there's an editorial in it about his book and it's written by the bad guy Holloway, his college library nemesis.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the point in the film where they have used the word hermeneutic more times than I did in my doctoral dissertation.
Yes, she's like, he goes which, after let me your tell hermeneutics.
You, yeah, my doctoral dissertation was riveting. Maybe I should make a movie.
Right? Yeah.
Woof.
So yeah, so she's like, you know, when a man hits you in the hermeneutics, you got to hit back. And he says, and I quote, there's no use chasing the devil's dogs.
What?
What? So you should write a rebuttal. And I'm like, do a book review?
No, it was good.
Nuh-uh.
It's going on Goodreads.
Well, yeah, but no, he decides to chase the devil's dogs anyway, right? So we see him like thinking about writing his rebuttal. The closed captioning assures us that we're listening to a quote pensive melody.
Oh, and we see the dog.
Fat dog.
Oh, it's so cute. Why is
a big fat dog?
Fat dog.
Oh, I love the dog.
I like that someone's morbidly obese dog made it into the movie.
It's really cute. It's like a little Jack Russell, like a fat Jack Russell.
Yeah, so it's the best.
And it likes watching him play ping pong.
Very mediocre ping pong. This whole movie, he keeps talking about how he's real good at ping pong, but then we see him playing ping pong, and it looks like Heath warming up with somebody. It's just fucking pathetic.
But I don't even want to talk shit about his ping pong. If this whole movie was that dog and ping pong, it would be so much more riveting.
Oh, yeah.
Than him reading and doing hermeneutic scholarship.
Watching those two guys, watching two bad ping pong players play to like, you know, first to 71 or whatever would have been better than this fucking movie. Yeah. So he's telling Joe about all his index card research and he's written down, or no, sorry, he's telling Jimmy, the documentarian about it. And he's written down like Old Testament texts about there not being a hell. So apparently so far, the there isn't eternal torment side is winning.
Mm. Is that the conditionalists?
Yes.
Which is weird because at the beginning of the movie, he said that he wasn't on that side.
Oh, it's like he's been taught. It's the same way that like Lee Strobel was an atheist when he started doing his Jesus research. Yes,
exactly. He was an atheist and it had nothing to do with his wife's devout Christianity.
Right. Yeah. So then we catch up with it. There's this scene where he's trying to talk about the pseudepigrapher to his wife again, but she's too busy doing lady stuff. Like everything's laundry for her.
You get it, Kara, right? Stains. Huh? That's all ladies can think about. She literally just goes from household task to household task. He's like, hey, literally, his exact words are, I'm sorry, I've just been busy with this eternal punishment stuff.
Yes. So
I think I wrote here, God, I hate everything. How this is entertaining to you, I will never understand.
Yeah, the movie's not entertaining to either of us. It's thinking about you watching the movie, Kara, that is entertaining.
I see,
enjoyable to me. Also, pseudepigrapha doesn't count. I don't know why the fuck he brings it up multiple times throughout the movie. I am a pseudepigrapha. Hi, how's it going, everybody?
Yeah,
it's
right.
Eli. It's the gospel of Eli, and I say Jesus was a bisexual woman who said, fuck ice. I don't know, what do you want from me?
There you go.
I like it.
So yeah, but during the middle of this boring speech, his dad gets a call that his dad's in the hospital, right? So we go to the hospital where we learn that his dad is going to die of pneumonia his dad is going to die of being too stubborn to go get medical treatment when he had fucking pneumonia.
Right. But this is a very important of Christian passing, right? Which is that you don't get any medical care until you are a tremendous burden on your friends and family. And then you die hooked up to as many life-saving machines as possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a great Christian tradition to hold on to the last strand of your life as hard and as expensively as you possibly can.
After making no effort whatsoever up to that point.
But they didn't even do that right in this movie.
Right.
Because they didn't even let him die in this scene.
It's a really weird, because they have like the saying goodbye scene, and then they have the him and his wife being sad about it scene, and then he dies. And it's just like, why wouldn't you just kill him there? You fucking idiots.
And why in all these movies do they call their dads daddy?
Yeah, that's...
Stop calling your father daddy, especially because you're the same age.
Right, yeah, that's what really fucks it up, is that these two actors are the same age. He's like, oh, daddy. And of course, we have this like long moment where daddy tells him how proud he is of him. And I'm can you imagine what a douche you would have to be to include a scene in your movie where your dad's dying words were about how awesome you were?
I know, yeah. Like, oh God, I've got to work on your self-esteem. This guy needs therapy.
Yeah, right.
That's from what this movie is really about.
BetterHelp.com. So Edward takes Sarah Fay now to his favorite childhood sadness spot and tells her about old dead Davey.
I have a friend who the only enjoyable part of the movie was here for a second, so I guess I'm nostalgic for this or something.
Oh my God, Eli, what you wrote during this scene, I was laughing so fucking hard.
We talking about the foot stuff that he's going to have?
So like he said, she comes around, she's like, hold on right where you are. So they're sitting in the car together. So she comes around from the passenger side and I'm like, oh, is this going to be a sex thing? And then she starts taking his shoes off and I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Yeah.
I wrote in my notes, if she sucks his toes, I'm going to apologize to Kara through multiple lawyers. Like, lawyers who are represented by other lawyers.
And to be like, to get a little serious for a second, oh God, on this here comedy show, this is where I realized that like, what this movie is about is what I went through when I was maybe like between 6 and 9 years old. Like, I was raised Mormon, right? Mm-hmm. And in Mormon lore, there's the kingdoms of heaven. Mm-hmm. There's the celestial, the terrestrial, the telestial, all that good stuff. So when I was 6, my parents got divorced. And a couple years later, my dad remarried a woman I didn't know. And I was told that because they were married and sealed, that we would all be together in the celestial kingdom after we died. But my mom would be hanging out over on like the terrestrial side and I'd have to go visit her, but she couldn't come hang out with us in like God's light. And I was like, this is pretty fucked up.
Oh, wow.
I don't think that this is okay. That like, just because my parents got divorced, my mom will no longer be with her own children, but this rando lady that my dad chose to marry will now be with her children in heaven. And I was like, I don't think this is the religion for me.
Right.
But it took this dude until he was like 40 to figure this out.
And he never quite figured it out. Yeah.
He still doesn't quite get there.
Mm-mm. Well, so it's funny that like you were thinking about that. All I wrote in my notes is like, it must be so sad to be a Christian. Your wife comes around the car and you think it's going to be a fuck thing. And she's like, no, let's take our shoes off and wade in the water. And you're like, yeah, let's fucking wade in the fucking water.
Sitting there with your arms crossed. Couldn't have gotten a blowjob from one of your disciples, huh, Jesus? Not one. Couldn't have just gotten a little sloppy toppy once in your life, Jesus? You fucking nerd.
Well, you wrote cheek peck. This is Christian analingus.
It is Christian analingus. Everybody knows that is Christian rusty trombone is the cheek peck. That's what you get on Valentine's Day if it's also your birthday.
Yeah, there you go. So that's okay. So he goes into the church now, like his dad's just died and everybody's being very, very nice to him and everything. But then he invites the custodian guy to come up and pray for everybody, and he's black. So they freak out.
He just made a fatal error in this 70s Alabama church.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. That actually is really progressive.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, again, to be clear, that was not the thrust of Edward Fudge's life, right? This is just one time he got fired for letting a black guy pray. And it's funny because what's obviously happening is the writers of this movie are like, hey, man, this movie's so boring, I'm going to fucking die. Did anything interesting ever happen to Edward Fudge? And he, who was alive while they were making this movie, was like, I got fired for letting a black guy be at the front of the room once. Do you care about that? And they're like, great, yep, put it in the film.
Jesus, something.
Sure.
And also, like, no insult to this actor, this African-American actor. There is no way that you can say our dear brother Fudge solemnly.
Yeah, it's tough.
Right? There's no amount of acting skill that'll allow you to do that.
Also, I know the little lady yarmulkes, the napkin head things are real, but they surprised me with a shot of one in this scene. It tickled me for a while.
Yeah.
Is this a Baptist thing?
I don't know. I've never seen it. So then we get Edward fucking watching Joe fix his oven, right?
He's literally sitting on top of the oven while Joe is fixing
it. And like, yeah, and he's like, hand me this. And he's like doing it really slow and everything. Yeah. But he just cannot seem to get that intertestamental stuff to match up to the traditionalist view of eternal punishment.
Oh my God, I don't care.
Oh, yeah, right. Sarah comes in, she's like, hey, you forgot the thing we're supposed to go to. And he goes, oh, I almost forgot. And I'm like, no, you just regular forgot and she reminded you, dude. You fucking liar. We saw it happen.
You know what I just remembered?
The thing you just reminded me of, yeah. But they remember that they have to go out and see Farmer Dan, right? So they go out, they drive out to see Farmer Dan. Farmer Dan drives up on a tractor, as farmers are wont to do, right?
Yeah, they're like, okay, so what happened ostensibly is that Farmer Dan called him on the phone and said, I need to see you in person. Come meet me in the middle of a field.
Yes, right. And then, so of course, he gets out to the field and there's like, can you leave your wife in the car while we man talk some man talk?
Literally wait in the truck.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. We don't want to just fail the Bechdel test here.
We'd like to murder it.
But this is where he finds out that they're firing him for letting that black guy pray. The church doesn't want him there anymore.
Oh my God. And this reeks of Trump supporter, right? Hey, I know I asked you to drive an hour and a half out onto my property and I greatly inconvenienced you to fire you, but I believe in looking a man in the eye. I don't give a fuck what you believe in, Jethro.
Look, if Jethro believes
I can remove all of your teeth with my bare hands. Minimal effort.
So, okay, look, if Jethro believes in looking a man in the eye when he gives him bad news, go to him.
Right.
Right? Like, go to his fucking house, ring his fucking doorbell. You know, don't try. I believe in, like, looking you in the eye, which is why I made you come to me.
Yeah, which is why I didn't get off my tractor.
Fuck you.
Suck his dick. That's how you get your revenge. You just get down there and suck his dick a little bit, and he's like, no. Mm-hmm. Oh! And then you're like, no one will ever believe you. Drive away.
And then it's a way better movie.
Exactly.
Way better.
Kara gets it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, yeah, but they drive off. Sarah's narration shows up to be like, he was real hurt by all that. And I'm like, well, obviously, I mean, we watched it happen. We're watching the movie. So, okay, but just when it looked, and also like dad's dead and the publishing company is not doing so well. And just when it looked like they were going to have to close down the publishing company, they got a great offer from some investor group from California that wanted to buy it.
This scene doesn't matter.
Yeah. Hey, can you tell us who the person is?
No.
No, I think you should meet them tomorrow morning at the office.
At 9 a.m.
What?
That's the whole scene. That's it.
That's the whole scene.
Nailed it.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
So, okay, so now he's going to go meet with the mystery investor. And wouldn't you know it, it's Mr. Carthage or whatever the fuck the guy was pulling
down. Simon Claridge.
Simon Claridge. The other named character in the movie.
Yeah. It's the bad guy coach from earlier in the movie. But imagine how weird this would have been if it had been anybody but him.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. If he had just been like, hi, I'm Dan Skragelnadel.
Yeah.
I like a couple of the books your dad did. I don't know why I had you meet me here for breakfast. Feel like we could have just gone at some kind of paper signing when the introduction could have happened.
Yeah. But so they're like, yeah, well, you know, we'll keep you on doing your job as the publisher, which would be weird since you ran this company out of business. But If you want to keep your job, you need to denounce all this grace doctrine shit that the movie's apparently about. And he's not ready to do that.
These people are way too invested.
Yeah.
Why do they care so much?
Because it's heresy.
Heresy.
Because they have a way that dragons fuck already. Because it's all made up. Here's the problem, right? When you're lying, Carrie, you're a very honest person. So let me bring you into my world.
Okay.
When you're lying a lot.
Uh-huh. For a living.
Nobody gets to fuck with the lie. If someone else is like, oh yeah, no, we were at Jimmy's house. We played ping pong. No, don't change the details. if we examine the lie, someone's going to go, what if the whole thing's not true? And then we have to pay taxes and stop fucking kids.
Yeah. Like,
be a G. That's the amazing thing is 90% of this movie is people just eyes wide being like, hey, Edward, can I talk to you over here for a second? And him being like, I don't see nothing about them Bible, about them being da, 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 da. You don't see anything in that Bible. It's made by Bronze Age people who wiped with their hand and then ate with that same hand, Edward. Your house is free. Fucking shut up. Yeah.
Well, as you resign yourself to the fact that this really is all the plot you're going to get, we're going to take a quick break. But first, let me give Act 3 the hard sell. How does the blending of Gehenna, Sheol, and Tartarus in the New Testament complicate a uniform doctrine of eternal torment? To what extent does the eternal punishment scenario in the Gospels articulating Jewish apocalyptic ideas of annihilationism? How does the study of the Greek word ainos impact the debate between conditionalists and traditionalists' views of hell? Find out the answers to literally these questions when we return for the tedious conclusion of Hell and Mr. Fudge.
What about resting your knees on coconuts? That's got to build a muscle, right?
What part of this is a bad idea don't you understand?
Pretty much all of it, if I'm being honest.
You know what? That's fair.
Hey, guys. You ready to finish up the show?
Yeah. Guess it turns out Carrot isn't going to help me be a fitness influencer after all.
Eli, if you want to get in shape this year, you should try FitBod.
What's FitBod?
Really, Kara? 2 points, one episode.
I'm driving to San Francisco for you.
Fine.
FitBod customizes every workout and adapts as you improve to avoid boredom and plateaus on your journey.
That sounds great.
It is. FitBod creates a personalized workout routine based on your goals, fitness level, and available equipment, so I can get a great workout in whether I'm in a fully stocked gym or an empty hotel room. That's why I, Noah Illusions, personally endorse FitBod.
All right, Noah. I'm sold. Where do I sign up?
Level up your workout in the new year. Join FitBod today to get your personalized workout plan. Get 25% off your subscription or try the app for free for 7 days at fitbod.me/gam. That's FITBOD.ME/gam.
All right, Noah. Thanks.
So you were going to help him be a fitness influencer?
No, but I pepper sprayed him.
I thought it was perfume.
It made you throw up.
I didn't say it was good perfume.
Excuse me, is anyone sitting here?
No.
Oh, great. May I?
Sure.
So, how long have you been a demon?
It's my first day, actually. I opened a haunted box.
Haunted box! Classic way to turn into a demon. So, they tell you what you're doing yet?
Oh, yes. I'm gonna haunt the house for a while, of course, but then I'm gonna torture men who kill their wives.
Oh, my God. Amazing gig. You just started and you got that?
Yeah, first day. What about you? What kind of demon are you?
Oh, I do all sorts of stuff. I don't really tie myself down to one job.
Well, I didn't realize we had those kinds.
Oh, yeah. I tempted kings and princes. I'm in charge of all the unbaptized babies. I do a whole bunch of...
I'm sorry. What?
Oh, kings and princes. Yeah, like their sons.
No. The other thing you said.
Fine. I am in charge of torturing the unbaptized babies forever. Okay?
Like, babies?
Yep. Babies. Why does everyone ask babies?
Okay.
But that's
okay,
what a baby
I see.
Means.
But, like, how do you...
Trust me, you don't want to know.
No, you're right. I don't. Actually, I think I see some friends over there. I'm just going to go say hi.
Sometimes they're toddlers. It's not just babies.
Right. I'm just gonna,
Right. Go. I'll see you around.
No, you won't.
No, I will not.
And And we're back for still more of this shit. We're going to rejoin the action with a little Edward is bummed about getting fired montage, which is mostly hay based.
In the voiceover, he's like, Joe Mark stayed my friend. And I'm like, why would he not stay your friend, Edward?
Yeah.
Well, 1970s Alabama, I guess. Maybe.
That's true, yeah, no.
But so this eventually resolves with him chatting with Joe Mark about Bible stuff, right? And this is where he's talking about how in Jude, it says eternal fire about a fire that wasn't eternal.
I like Disneyland. Hey, big shout out to Joe Mark to trying to change this subject. Because look, here's the thing. We're just watching the movie. Joe Mark had to put up with this shit for 30 years.
Well, that's okay.
And by this point in the movie, he was just like, anything but the stupid Bible thing, man. None of it's real.
Because we literally never see him talk about any other thing, right? It's either directly or tangentially related to this fucking argument about universal grace and the lack of eternal punishment, or... Sorry. No, or it's that. It's just that.
It's just that.
So, but his point, I guess, here is that, you know, God just says eternal all the time. He likes to exaggerate that God.
He's fucking God. The conclusion I have at this point in the movie is that God lies sometimes.
So then we cut to he's typing on these little index cards. That's where he's putting all his research, I guess. And this is where he gets a call from Don Holloway. Don wants to meet him for lunch. They haven't seen each other in years, right? So he goes to tell Sarah, and Sarah's like, you should fight him. You should fight him with your fists and your teeth.
You should fight him and lose while I watch. And I don't know if this actress fucking vamped this line, what happened, but he's like, I guess I'm a glass half full person. And she's like, but honey, you got to remember, sometimes people want to take that glass and hit you. No, your drink at, okay, you're the glass and you're half full of hope, but Don Holloway is going to fuck, never mind. Go, I'll complain about laundry when you're back. God, I hate this movie.
It's so bad.
Oh. Yeah, but she's like, watch your back. And I'm like, you can't fool me into thinking there's tension in this fucking movie. So then we're going to go to lunch. They're going to go to lunch together, right? Because he's like, well, you know, one way or the other, I get a free lunch out of it. And I'm like, oh, there you go. Looking on the bright side of things. Yeah. So we go to this lunch place called the Red Caboose. There's these two old guys, and they're like, well, we're here going to do some picking for you. And they start playing guitar.
Yeah, that's the best scene in the movie.
Best seconds of the movie, yeah. Yes. By the way, Eli, anytime you tell me Anna has a gig, this is what I picture, right? I picture her picking.
Can
it
I
down
tell you, you're 100%
I was pretty sure I was. Mm-hmm. He goes, would you like, Edward comes in and sees Don. He goes, would you like a sweet tea? And he goes, and I quote, well, I'd turn down a bucket of doorknobs for that. What?
Is that a real expression, Noah?
I don't
You're down there.
Think that it is.
Has anyone ever told you about what they would or wouldn't do for a bucket of doorknobs?
I don't know, man. Why? I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like a bucket of doorknobs. I can't imagine when that would come in handy.
Let's melt them down for the brass. God, we should have finished them off during the Civil War. We really, this is a terrible.
Should have gone Carthaginian on that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. It was a bad idea.
So, and also, by the way, speaking of people we should have taken out, Don Holloway at this point, he whistles to get the server's attention so he can go fuck himself.
Dick. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he's like, you know, I think we should just let bygones be bygones. I sure am sorry I went at your hermeneutics so hard in that book review. and I'm also sure sorry that you got fired for letting an African-American dude preach.
Oh, and I'm sorry that your dad's dead. Don't forget
that. Oh, sorry that your dad's dead also. Wow, I am so sorry for so much. You are at the nadir.
You all went out for Indian food the other night and you asked it for mild spicy, but they gave you regular spicy. And you ate it because, like, it feels vaguely racist to tell someone that food is too spicy when it's their national cuisine. So you had the shits for, like, a week and a half. And at the end of that week and a half, you were like, I think I might be really sick. Like, something's wrong with
I'm also sorry about that. Yeah.
I'm sorry about that.
But he's like, you know, he's like, well, you know, I was just sitting here thinking about how we're standing on a dam that we built to hold back God's grace. And Don Holloway's like, wow, man, you literally have not had a new thought since college, have you? Just the same goddamn thought. And he's like, yes. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So then sometime later, Joe comes in while he's working and he's got some bad news. Holloway wrote another hit piece about him in their little magazinelet. Right?
Who cares?
I don't fucking know.
You know, Sarah Faye, she saw that one coming. She did. She saw it coming.
Yeah, she did. She did. She called it. So he's like, you know, what we need to do is have a very small meeting with Holloway and the church elders where you can say the same damn shit you've been saying this entire fucking movie. So they go to this meeting and he's like, oh, I was only expecting 15 elders, but it turned out there was a full church of people waiting to hear how wrong I was.
It's a trap.
Yeah. Yeah, he's trapped.
Shouldn't have worn this bell-bottom suit.
He should always wear that bell-bottom suit. But there's a great moment here, too, where he's like, he's walking into the lion's den, and Holloway's wife comes up to Sarah Faye, and she's like, I am very sorry for how bad my husband's about to wipe the floor with Edward. I genuinely am.
Sorry, I have sort of the opposite kink of yours, and so I've really been enjoying how our lives have been going.
We should probably keep this going, because you're...
Edward, are you working on that movie? Make sure that you mention that the guy's wife came up to me, and she was like, I'm sorry. Because I'm a full person with a complex inner life as well, Edward.
I'm not
and
just
this
laundry.
May be the only lasting representation of it on Tubi.com. So if you would please relate my inner experience into the universe so that the eventual all-knowing AI will verify I was a person.
I think my favorite part of this scene is the way that Eli spelled the word baloney.
Oh my God, because he knows there's a G in there somewhere, right? Like that stuck somewhere. Somehow that stuck and nothing else did. Yeah.
It's so good, Eli.
Balogny.
Can I tell you guys, when we, for the sketch, which you've already heard, podcast listener, I wrote the word annihilationist from my heart. And I, for I think the first time in our work history, went, I'm going to Google how that word is spelled. Kara doesn't have the hour and a half of study it takes. Why does it begin with a J?
So Edward starts off his defense of his thesis or whatever, right? He says a bunch of Jesus words. He's like, you know, people interpret the Bible differently. That doesn't happen with most books anywhere near as often as it does with the perfect word of God, which is... Well, that's weird if you think about it. It didn't seem like how a God would write a book at all. And then Holloway cuts in the middle of his thing, just like takes the mic over. And he's like, wait a minute. Do you mean to
gay.
Tell me that cat? He goes, you mean to tell me that Catholics are going to be in heaven? He's like, well, yes. And everybody's like gasping or whatever. Fucking Catholics. I'm not sharing a heaven with Catholics. And then... Fucking, you know, and Holloway's like, well, if anybody'd like to speak in his defense, go right ahead. So that's when Arvid McGuire stands up. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, oh, you've neglected to mention Arvid McGuire during your review of the movie, and we have no idea who the fuck this person is. Welcome to the goddamn club. We literally have not met this character yet, but he stands up at this point and he goes, I would like to say a few words. And we're like, who? They even have a little confessional where he shows up and he's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really think my words accomplish much of anything. Everybody was...
You're not going to put that in the movie,
I hope
it's
not, because that would be really weird. Why would I even
be
there?
What are you trying to desperately to hit 90 minutes and failing by 5.5 minutes?
So, and then there's also, like, before they started their speeches, there's this moment where Holloway says they printed up cards with all of Holloway's opinions on one side and Edward's opinions on the other.
Is that what they were?
Yeah.
This there's no stakes. I don't care.
Right. But now there's stakes. Wait, there are about to be stakes because as everybody's leaving, the cards are missing.
Oh.
Huh?
Who took the cards? There's a mystery now. So as he's leaving, as though the movie wanted to answer Kara's charge that there are no stakes, an old lady just randomly comes up and slaps Edward for his blasphemies.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. And then they were like, that was interesting.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, it was interesting getting slapped by that old woman.
Yeah, he's like, be sure to put in that part where I got my ass kicked by that old lady. That always turns my wife on when we talk about that.
She loves that part. It's her favorite part of the story.
So that night.
She actually calls it the time I got slapped in the face.
So that night, Edward, Sarah, Edward's mom and Joe, they all go to the fudge house to lick their wounds after he got his ass kicked in that debate, right? Oh,
the fudge house. I don't like it. Don't say that again, please.
I've already asked so much of you this weekend, Kara. That's fair.
That's my new nickname for sex, Kara. I'm going to be like, taking you to the fudge. I know.
It's just, there's something.
You've been
about
a good girl.
It
it's time for
right.
you to get a trip to the fudge. Oh, God. Yeah,
it tastes like as good as it smells or something. What is it?
Okay, tastes as good as it smells. You invented that's on you. You're coming up with new Lovecraftian words now, Kara Santa Maria.
I said as it's spelled. Not smell.
I hope it tastes better than it smells.
Didn't he say something weird like it's spelled like it tastes?
Yeah, exactly.
It makes no fucking sense.
So they're all sitting around talking. Oh, this is where we learn that mom's the one that stole the position cards. You know,
I like the mom in this movie. She's kind of a fucking badass.
Fuck yeah.
She hated her husband.
Steals some shit. Good for her.
There's a great moment here too, where he gets so fucking close. He goes, you know, here I am with a master's degree in this, and I feel like I don't know fact from fiction.
Mm-hmm.
That's literally what he fucking says. So I'm like, well.
Yeah, he goes, the Bible is so full of conflicting information. It's like, you think.
Oh, wow. You didn't notice that when you were in college? Jesus. So we get another fucking hit in the books montage.
Oh, yeah. There are multiple times in this film, which we didn't mention before, but there are multiple times in this film where he's reading while driving.
Yeah. Well, right. That's where this one starts. His buddy, Joe Mark, drives up behind him and he has to honk the horn because he's just sitting there at the stop sign reading a book. I'm like, that's not a level of research, man. If you're reading while you're driving, that's a psychosis thing.
No, I get it. I play fishdom in the car while I drive sometimes because I'm bored.
If you have ever ridden in the car with Eli, just don't.
Yeah,
don't.
Right.
Don't.
Honestly, like him playing Candy Crush didn't change a damn thing, right?
No, I was torn because Eli very kindly picked me up from, I think, JFK.
JFK.
Woof.
And drove me to White Plains, New York.
Oh, Jesus.
Twice, which is like next level friendship. And at the same time, I was so afraid I was going to die.
The whole time.
The whole time I was in the car that I was like, I'm grateful and also really don't want to be here right now.
Yes, exactly. You never felt more alive than when you got out of that hotel in White Plains. They were like, wow, Kara must really be excited for Nauticon. She's kissing the ground, crying, calling your loved ones.
So this is also, by the way, so like there's a moment here where he's like, we see his wife and kids eating without him. And I wrote in my notes like, fuck, did he have kids? Right? Because they haven't factored into the movie at all to this point.
Well, yeah, you know, kids don't count just like women.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We get to see cute fat dog again.
He's sitting on the roof of his car while he plays ping pong.
We get to see him. Well, we get the dramatic index card toss, right?
Yeah. This is the point in the film where it could have gone full John Nash and gotten interesting. Like, don't you think it could have been like very much A Beautiful Mind? Because it does feel like that's where they're going with things.
Oh, okay. All right. Like there was no Joe Mark this whole time or whatever.
Yeah. Like he's so obsessed with this thing, but like there was no Holloway. Like it was.
There's no Bible at all. The Bible was all in his mind. Yeah. So, but he throws his index cards and Sarah rushes in to clean them up and he's like, leave them on the ground. And she's like, well, fine. It's your office. It'll be all messed up. But this is where she tells me, she's like, you know, I'm going to take the kids to my mom's and we're going to stay here until you're done with all this fucking bullshit you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Reasonable.
And like what really happened is that like, and if you've ever fucking written a book, you understand this. Like what really happened is like they left for 3 weeks so he could have the house to himself while he finished his book and he could be 100%, you know, dedicated to that or whatever. But they make it in the movie, they have to make it into this dramatic, like, we can't even be here. You're so single-minded with your obsession for the... It's like, no, it's just he's just writing a fucking book, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly what happened, right? She was like, hey, we're going to my mom's for the weekend. And he was like, hon, I really got to work on my hell book. And she was like, fine.
Yeah, right.
Piece of shit.
Yeah.
And he was like, put it in the movie like it was a big dramatic moment where maybe you were leaving me.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, and then we now have to see him like still working on this hell book, but she's gone. So like the house is all dirty and how do these dishes even work? right?
Just living like Keith Enright for the emotional peak of the movie, eating cereal over the sink.
It's actually pretty great. I get to think about hell stuff and nobody comes and touches my stuff. It's great. It's awesome. But now it's time for him to have his Jeff Goldblum moment.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has his breakthrough during ping pong practice. He runs to Joe Mark's house in the middle of the night. Joe Mark shows up with some champagne and a rose and he goes, oh, it's Bible stuff. Okay, all right, fuck, shit, it's Bible stuff.
Yeah, this is weird to me because he gets to Joe Mark's house and he has like a big wraparound porch. He's got like porch swings. There's flowers all over his house. And I'm like, does he live alone? Does he have a wife?
Yeah.
Does he live with his mother?
The throuple argument is getting more and more viable, I think, as we go.
Yeah, this is like a big love situation where they like share the same backyard, you know, but they go to the different houses to fuck.
Yeah. So, yeah, but he's had this big breakthrough. He explains to Joe Mark, he's like, you know that whole immortal soul thing? Turns out, there's no such thing as an immortal soul. That's not in the Bible at all. That's a pagan idea that we got from Tertullian.
Yeah, he said it comes from Plato and Socrates. And I'm like, that makes it pagan?
I guess.
Yeah.
So it's everything pre-Christian is pagan, isn't it?
Also, like, it's very easy to sympathize with the annihilist position because it's closer to the truth than the insane thing it's reflecting on. But the Bible definitely talks about an immortal soul. It talks about it a lot.
I mean, a lot of the stuff it says doesn't make any goddamn sense if there's no immortal soul. Yeah.
Right. Like the examples that he uses are just like, well, there's no example of an immortal soul in hell, but there's lots of examples of immortal souls in heaven, including very explicit instructions by Jesus Christ about how to have one.
Yeah.
So the Bible very clearly does say there are immortal souls.
True, true. He doesn't specify here that he means the bad ones.
Right.
Just the bad ones.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, but then we get the documentarian asking for like clarification of that last scene, right? And he does more just fucking Bible minutiae at us. Like I have notes written here and I'm just like, God, Jesus, I don't want to go to all the trouble of explaining what any of my notes mean. This is boring as fuck.
His big takeaway here is that believers live forever, mm-hmm. but we just won't call it an immortal soul in heaven. Right. And then everyone else just rots, right?
And just dies.
Right.
Yeah, just
dies and rots, but doesn't actually burn forever in hell.
We spent 90 minutes of a Christian movie for Edward Fudge to spend his entire life researching to be half right.
and he's like, well, I finally finished my research. It turns out I've proved exactly the thing that I've thought since college. What are the odds?
Right. Yeah, it turns out that the impulse I had as a third grader is true.
Yes, right. So now, okay, so he goes to see Arvid, that rando that spoke up for him at the church.
Oh, yeah, he's just on his porch swing whittling.
Literally on his porch swing whittling. It's so silly. But he's like, you know, he says, there's no hell and I can prove it. And I'm like, not as well as I can, man.
Yeah, he's really stretching the definition of proof evidence in a lot of these scenes.
He goes, you know, a feller wants to do a radio interview with me about it. And I'm like, oh, please tell me this movie is going to culminate in Ye Olde podcast episode. Right?
Just telling Joe Rogan about how there's no hell.
Yeah.
Whoa.
But Arvid gives him some wisdom. He gives him the tip just to see how it feels philosophy of preaching new ideas. Right. He's like, you got to lube them up for these kind of things. They're going to be mad at you.
Yep, they're just going to tighten up that sphincter. So, too careful.
Well, literally, too. So now it's time for the dramatic interview, right? Which is a friendly interview, right? Like, I thought at the very least this interview that he was setting up was going to be contentious and that this guy was going to be challenging. But if the guy's like, nah, that's pretty cool, man.
That's neat.
No hell, huh?
Cool, man. Good for you.
Yeah, and he's like the only not Southern person in the movie. So just by comparison, because of his voice, he seems really intelligent.
Sorry, Southern listeners. She said it. I did.
He's literally. No, and I'm from Texas. All right. Yep. My parents.
You're allowed to say
like
it.
Yeah, she went
sister.
To the Juniper Boongernigern.
What?
The Jupiter house.
That one.
No, but yeah, he sits down. I guess this is supposed to be like a callback to his dad being a radio guy.
Yeah.
That's so fucking stupid.
Yeah. So, but then we catch back up with the original doodly-doo of the film, right? That's where he was in Denton, Texas, fresh from the fucking Jupiter house, about to have his big, like Holloway is introducing him to this church where he's going to have the same fucking thing again, right? The same thing we've done over and over again in this movie, right? Like he's going to present
no payoff.
The same fucking shit, right? So he goes out and he's like, you know, Holloway's introducing him. He goes, here's a man who's actually going to burn in the hell that he doesn't believe in. I give you Edward Fudge, right?
Honestly, I wish I would start getting introduced that way. Just like,
hey, you got it, buddy. You got it.
Yay!
But then, like, he goes out and he's all nervous because he thinks everybody's going to be mad at him again, like they have every other time in the movie where he preached about this shit. But a bunch of people, like, oh, Captain, my Captain, him. Mm-hmm. Right? They all stand up. We're with you, Fudge.
And, like, so the title of his talk, which is also the title of his book, is Hell is Simply a Fire That Consumes.
Yes. Yeah, The Fire That Consumes is the name of the
book.
What
does that mean?
So the idea is that when they're talking about your soul burning in hell, that's just how God, that's like God's disposal method.
Right.
When he's done with souls is he just throws them into a fire that consumes them.
And that's better?
That's better than suffering for eternity, I guess. I don't know. I feel like suffering for eternity is better than oblivion if I had to choose between one or the other.
And it doesn't even sound like good oblivion. It sounds like burn to death.
Well, yeah,
oblivion.
Like yeah, you end screaming and in pain one way or the other. Yeah.
So he's like comforted by the fact that his friend Davey, who was never baptized and drunk drove and died, instead of being tortured in hell forever, is just consumed by hellfire.
Yeah, he's just nowhere. He's in the oblivion screaming.
Well, but specifically screamed his way into the oblivion by having his face melted off. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. That's the better view. That's like because he's more progressive than the traditionalists.
That's some hokum.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so that's the progressive hokum that we're after. But yeah, so he just states his fucking position for the 14th time in the movie, but this time everybody claps because it's the end of the movie, right? And then the Breakfast Club close comes up, or the American Graffiti close comes up, and it says that the research was published in the book The Fire That Consumes, which is, quote, one of the most influential books about hell ever written.
one of.
Yeah, right. You know, I checked. It's currently sitting at number 4,104 in the Christian evangelism category on Amazon. So
amazing.
It's one
you did
of
it, Fudge. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And also Fudge turned into a lawyer because there's no money in this preaching shit if you don't believe in hell, I guess.
I'm gonna get a real job.
Yeah. So and I guess, yeah, somehow less than nothing has happened and we're done. The movie's over. Kara. I cannot say thank you enough.
No, you cannot.
Literally, yeah, right.
No.
And of course, if you want to hear what Kara sounds like when she isn't recalling trauma, be sure to check the show notes for a link to Talk Nerdy. And well, that does it for our review of Hell and Mr. Fudge. That's not going to do it for the episode just yet because we still need to insert next episode tease here. So Eli, tell us what's on deck.
Family hiding in Roman Egypt. Son known as the boy doubts Guardian the Carpenter. Rebelling with mysterious powers. As he uses his abilities, they face natural and divine horrors. We'll be watching Nicolas Cage in the spooktacular retelling of the Apocrypha of Thomas that is The Carpenter's Son.
All right. So with Nicolas the fuck Cage to look forward to, we're going to bring episode 543 to a merciful close. Once again, a huge thanks to all the Patreon donors that help make the show go. If you'd like to count yourself among their ranks, you make a per episode donation at patreon.com/godawful and thereby earn early access to an ad-free version of every episode. You can also help a ton by leaving a 5-star review and by sharing the show on all your various social media platforms. And if you enjoy this show, be sure to check out our sibling shows, The Scathing Atheist, Citation Needed, D&D-, and The Skeptic Crowd, available wherever podcasts live. If you have questions, comments, or cinematic suggestions, you can email godawfulmovies@gmail.com. Tim Robertson takes care of our social media. Our theme song is written and performed by Rice Lightning with Drafts on Mars. All the other music was written and performed by our audio engineer, Morgan Clark, and was used with permission. Thanks again for giving us a check of your life this week for Heath Enright and Eli. I'm no illusions. Promise to work harder, earn another check next week. Until then, we'll leave you with the American Graffiti close.
Here we go. Edward Fudge went on systematically to prove other not real things in the Bible, like burning bushes and Babylon towers and virgin birth and whatnot, and so on and so forth. Coconuts, bologna, pseudographia, hermeneutic.
my new cell phone ring when
It turns out donkeys couldn't actually talk neither.
Kirk Cameron watched this movie and broke Ray Comfort's heart.
Aww.
This content is scan-credentialed, which means you can report instances of harassment, abuse, or other harm to their hotline at 617-249-4255 or on their website at creatoraccountabilitynetwork.org. This podcast is a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm, LLC, and was created without the use of generative AI. Its contents may not be used for AI training. Copyright 2026. All rights reserved.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.